Welcome to the Kindling's Muse podcast.
Hi, this is Dick Staub with another in our Journeys series, conversations with thoughtful creatives and cultural influencers on their life, work, and personal journey. Today, we continue our conversation with Frank Martel. We're visiting with Frank Mate. He was just telling us a bit more about the people in and around Tuscany, and a little bit about the house that he bought. How did you find this house in Tuscany?
The valley beyond us, there was nothing when we moved there. There were just ruins all through, so you could walk for miles through this wonderful countryside. And there are no fences in Tuscany. Nobody fences in. There's no need to, unless you have a horse that you don't want to run away. And you can walk for miles. And the medieval town of Montepulciano was about a 20-minute walk from us, and we usually end up walking to town most of the time instead of driving. And it was a short walk, but a long walk in a sense. They always stopped and chatted with the neighbors because the houses up there were very close to the road. And I found a place just by looking at it from the town. One time I thought that could never be for sale. It's a beautiful, tiny little house at the very end of a dirt road where it's just open country and ruins after that. And sure enough, miracles do still happen.
Now, how affordable is such a place for the average American who would decide they wanted to pick up and go do what you do now?
Well, that was our life savings that we poured in there, and we had built a house ourselves and sold at a pretty decent profit. And it's affordable. I think if most people own their house here, you can certainly convert that to a house there. An average suburban house, depending on how much equity I suppose you have. I think that, you know, there are still ruins at decent prices that you can get small ruins and fix up, or there are. What's wonderful about Tuscany is there are very tiny towns outside the small towns. There are hamlets, I guess you could call them, of 5 or 6 or 7 or 20 houses. And inside those, depending on your pocket, your purse, there are some very small houses that are sort of semi-attached with little gardens in these little hamlets. I mean, there's this enormous variety. You don't need to buy a villa for $300,000 to feel at home.
So tell us about the new life in this old land. What does your life consist of in Tuscany?
Very basic. Candace, who used to be an ardent painter, has become a maniac for an orto, it's called in Italian. It's a vegetable garden. And everybody has one, and the doctor has one, and the architect has one. Everybody works, makes their own food for the pleasure, just the pleasure of, you know, having your own vegetables when you need them, and making your own wine from your own grapes, and picking your own olives. It's just sort of such an old tradition that it's not, does not belong strictly to the farmers. So Candace works the land. We just planted about 5 acres of vines ourselves. So I'm out there struggling away with that, with planting poles and pruning olive trees, picking olives. And our kid, who's 10, is loves it, and he loves helping with these kind of things that mean something. And he understands that, you know, he's feeding himself, that this thing is wonderful to eat because it doesn't have nobody sprays it, and it's not, has no preservatives, and it's just fresh food, and it's our food. And he feels very proud of doing this stuff.
Now, where does he go to school?
He goes to school in town. It's an Italian school, and comes home, and the poor kid has to translate into English because we speak English at home. His homework, and translate back into Italian again so we can help him a little bit, but... He gets along. Speaks perfect Italian and English, better Italian than we do, obviously.
So now, is this your long-term life now? Can you picture yourself moving from Tuscany?
Dick, honestly, and this is real truth, not a day goes by that I don't just stop and look at the light or the rolling hills or our gardens or the woods behind us or the house. And I say, this is paradise at least 3 or 4 times a day. And, you know, it doesn't happen very often in New York City. So I think we're staying for a long time now.
But you really have had a restlessness about you in your life, wouldn't you say? Kind of a what's next kind of mentality?
I have, you know, and don't bring that up. Kind of just thrashing when you bring it up again. No, I've always moved around. But, you know, we've been there for 10 years now, and that seems like almost forever. Yeah, because as I said, if you don't really particularly feel at home someplace, you don't really have any reason to stay, or I've never had any reason to stay, you know, and we traveled a lot, as I said. We lived in a Volkswagen van for 5 months in Central America, in Guatemala and El Salvador and Honduras before the revolutions were in great paces in the early 70s. So we were very vagabond. But the thing is, I think if you're brought up extremely poor like I was, you don't miss things and objects too much. You feel so self-contained that... As long as, you know, you've got somebody you love with you, you're moving everything that counts to you, you know, so it really doesn't make much difference where you are.
Now, would you agree that what you're describing is really essential human life? In other words, you're not describing something that is for a peculiar few that never got the 60s sense of communal, relational life out of their system. But this, in fact, you would conclude is part of what it means to essentially be human.
Dick, I really believe that firmly. And we were doing a radio interview one time in a small town in Tuscany. A lady came from National Public Radio, and we were talking, and the owner kept sort of sitting around or coming by the table, sort of listening in. And we were there much after the restaurant closed at lunch, late lunch, and finally came over and he said, make sure you tell your audience that in Tuscany, the people and a family resists. And I thought, my God, he's right. That's all this is, that humanity has sort of staved off this onslaught of technology and which tend to separate us to enormous degrees. And I think Tuscany really has just held on to some very, very basic human principles. And I'm talking about community and where you count as a human being.
See, I come at it actually, just speaking personally, from a theological standpoint, regardless of a person's religious beliefs, it seems to me that if you look at the Judeo-Christian tradition, that it starts with the concept of God creating for relationship, God creating for relationship in a garden, and the essence of sin being the driving of a wedge between relationships of humans with humans, between humans and the land, between humans and God, and that what you end up with is the story of history being attempts to get back to the garden. And in fact, one of the things that 20th century humans have missed, and particularly in American culture, is this essential nature of relationship. And we all know it intuitively, and we all seek it, as obvious evidenced by the multitude of relationships, mostly discardable, that people engage in American society.
Exactly.
But in reality, what you're describing is getting back to the garden, isn't it?
Well, Dick, I mean, it seems almost laughable. We spend so much time in America with self-help books, with self-help programs. Good God, we've gotten here over, you know, thousands and thousands of years without this stuff, and we function very, very well as communities and neighborhoods and families. What happened to, have we got a, you know, sort of a communal amnesia? Have we forgotten how to be human or how to be a community or how to be friends with people? And I think that this essence is just drifting away from us little by little. And I talked about it more on Reasonable Life, and I think we have found so many substitutes, as I said, television sets, entertainments, entertainers. I mean, whatever happened to people talking to each other, people getting together and making music? I mean, maybe it wasn't as wonderful as somebody here on radio, but it was okay, and somebody played a harmonica or a comb with a piece of paper on it, and people sang and danced, and very simple, basic stuff that anybody can do. And now we think you need a $5,000 entertainment center or an $80 ticket to something to be entertained. And we tend to think that our friends aren't funny, that only Jay Leno's funny. Well, hell, Jay Leno, somebody that writes his stuff. My next-door neighbor is much funnier. The guy at Norton, who's the head of the sales department, is 10 times funnier. He's on the floor laughing. You know, I mean, I just don't think we concentrate on each other enough and believe that the relationships are important enough. I think relationships, almost as you say, are discardable, which is frightening. You know, yeah. I just.
Well, I kind of look at the book A Reasonable Life as the conceptual framework, and The Hills of Tuscany, A New Life in an Old Land, as the concept applied. And
my money where my mouth was, at least, didn't I?
Pardon?
I put my money where my mouth was, at least, didn't I?
You sure did. Thanks for joining us today. Folks, you've been listening to Ferenc Maté. The book is The Hills of Tuscany, A New Life in an Old Land. It's published by Norton, available at your local bookstore. This concludes our conversation with Ferenc Maté about Hills of Tuscany. Thank you for listening to Journeys on the Kindling's Muse. Thank you for listening to The Kindling's Muse. If this program sparks something in you, I invite you to participate at www.thekindlings.com. That's KINDLINGS. Share this program, tell a friend, or just leave a comment at www.thekindlings.com.